Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Johnny Tan, author of From My Mama's Kitchen, Food for the Soul, Recipes for Living. Welcome to my weekly From My Mama's Kitchen talk radio show. My guest this morning is Michaela Gagne. She is Miss Massachusetts 2006. Michaela went on to compete for the title of Miss America 2007 with her platform title, Heart Health, Listen, Learn, and Live, because she was diagnosed with a life-threatening heart condition and had undergone surgery for an implantable cardioverter defibrillator at 17 years old. She is a resident of Fall River, Massachusetts. She received her bachelor's degree in art with a minor in psychology from the University of Massachusetts at Amherst and a master's degree in mental health counseling and art therapy from Lesley University. Michaela and I will be discussing about her life's journey and her current mission in making a positive difference in our global community. Although she is not able to be with us live this morning, we have a pre-recorded interview for everyone to listen to. Please enjoy this wonderful interview with Michaela. Hi, Michaela. Welcome to From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Johnny. Thanks for having me.
I'm excited to have you on the show. Your work on heart health has touched many lives, and I'm sure it will continue to do so for many years. Let us start by getting to know you a little better. Please give us a quick walkthrough of your life from childhood to the present moment.
Well, sure. Like you mentioned, I'm from Fall River, Massachusetts, and I was raised here. We're a small city that really played a big influence in how I developed, I guess you could say. Very diverse population, just very interesting historical city. So, it was a place I always loved and knew I would be here the rest of my life because I loved it so much. I grew up with my mom, my dad, and my older sister, Rachel. My mom and dad, they are my rocks. They supported me every step of the way from, my first steps through all the adventures my life held and, really instilled in me always a sense of honesty and of giving. And, I grew up as kind of the tomboy. I hated dresses and the color pink, but I loved my sports. I would have been more likely to be rolling around beating up boys and rolling around in the dirt than being the girly girl. But, I took on that role as kind of my dad's son and helped him do a lot of carpentry work. And, they always, like I said, a very supportive family. I was a really lucky growing up. Quite the athlete, an artist. I always loved art and drawing and painting. Even from a young age, was kind of a deep thinker on just different areas of education, spirituality, so it's kind of my background a little bit.
Wonderful. When did you discover you have a problem with your heart?
Well, it all started actually when I was 15 years old. At the time, I was a three-season athlete in high school. I played soccer, basketball, and competed in track and field. And I was a varsity letterer in all three sports. And I basically was during a hurdle track and field event. I got to the finish line and collapsed. I almost became unconscious. It was just something very unusual I had never felt before, very dizzy. From there, the trainer was kind of like, well, you should get her further checked. It's a hot day today. Maybe she didn't eat enough. My parents brought me into the doctors, and originally they first diagnosed me with having hypoglycemia. So they said, well, snack a little more often, explain to me what that meant and what I'd have to watch out for. And then when they were doing a follow-up for the hypoglycemia, they found a heart murmur they had never heard before. So that sent me to the local cardiologist to double-check on that, make sure everything was okay. And from there, they diagnosed me with mitral valve prolapse, which is a very common heart murmur. A lot of people have it. Not a big deal, typically. And the local cardiologist said, Boston's right down the road. You got the best cardiologist, in the world right there. I'd take her in just in case to make sure everything's okay. He had done a lot of testing. He thought everything seemed all right. But kind of like, if it was my kid, just in case, go have everything checked out. So at this point, we went into Boston, went to Beth Israel Deaconess Hospital, and that cardiologist took one look at my electrocardiogram, my EKG, mm-hmm. and said, you can't play sports anymore. He said, it looks like you're borderline for a condition called long QT syndrome. I'm going to have you genetically tested, but when you hear about these athletes who are dropping dead on the field, mm-hmm. when they're playing, and these young people who are just dying unexpectedly from an underlying heart condition, he's like, this is one of those conditions. This is serious. And, of course, I was shattered. 6 months later, genetic testing confirmed I had it. I did have long QT. And by that point, it had taken about 2 years to finally get that diagnosis.
Mm-hmm.
So a month before I went into college, I had my first implantable cardioverter defibrillator, or ICD, surgically placed in my chest, and I guess the rest is history. I'm doing great now, and I have no restrictions on my life.
That's wonderful. You mentioned something about doing a test. Is there a history in your family?
Well, that was the first thing that they had asked us about. Were there any unexplained deaths, someone that died young from a heart condition? And we didn't have anybody. But then, lo and behold, after I was diagnosed, my grandfather, long QT is it's a dominant genetic disorder. Mm-hmm. So that basically meant, out of my four grandparents, one of my grandparents gave it to me. Two of them had passed. So I had two grandparents left to say, maybe it came from them. And my grandfather, my mom's father, was going in for a surgery, for a bypass surgery. So he happened to get a hold of his EKG. And I took one look at it, and I'm not a cardiologist, but I looked at it and said, oh, my gosh, I can see it. I can see the long QT on it.
Wow.
He sent it into my cardiologist. He looked at it, checked on the medications he was taking the whole night, and said, yep, that's where you got it from. And looking back, when he, as a kid, he passed out all the time, which is one of the few symptoms that you might have with long QT. He passed out all the time. So it looks like it passed on from him to my mom to me.
Very interesting. The medical field is much better now because we still continually hear that athletes just basically fainted and just died on the field while practicing.
Yeah, I mean, we've definitely come a long way between having the defibrillators available to, a lot of athletes are being screened ahead of time before competing. So we've come a long way, thank goodness, and we're seeing those numbers decrease.
How has this changed your teenage life?
In a lot of ways. I think when you're kind of looked at squarely and told that, at any point in your life while you're competing, you could have literally just dropped dead on the field, it just changes your perspective. You appreciate things a lot more, as I'm sure a lot of other survivors feel. You look at the world in a new way. And, that was me. At 17, I'm a senior in high school. All right, most kids are having their fun that year, doing all kinds of crazy things. And I wanted nothing more than to just spend time with my family. And, you discover who, your real friends are. And I just found myself, to be honest, very, very aggravated and irritated with my peer group. Because here they were just making these reckless decisions, abusing substances or getting in a car and drinking. And I'm just like, oh, my gosh, don't you realize how precious your life is, I just kind of got really frustrated. So I was kind of at that point happy to graduate and move forward. But it matures you in a very different way.
Interesting. When did becoming Miss Massachusetts get on your agenda?
Well, that was kind of funny. when I got sidelined, when I was sidelined from sports, again, I was the least likely beauty contestant you probably could have ever met. I was lucky to brush my hair every day when I went to school. And when I was sidelined, my guidance counselor, actually, Don Massoud, he looked at me and he said, hey, Michaela, Miss Fall River pageant's coming up. I think you'd be great for it. And I just remember looking at him and saying, you have got to be kidding me. you think I want to go prance around in a gown? And he's like, no. And he explains more about what the pageant meant and, that it was about, all kinds of, work in the community, which I loved. I did a lot of community service at that point, and having a talent and talking to judges in an interview. And it was just kind of like, Okay. All right. So I took it as kind of a dare. I had all these friends show up because they could not believe that I would actually, do this.
Right.
I walked like a complete jock in my swimsuit and heels. My mom was horrified with my lack of grace. But I found that I really liked it because in the interview, I sat there and told the judges all about, this heart condition that, at the
Right.
time I wasn't sure I had, but the fact that if I have it or not, people need to be aware that it's out there along with so many other conditions that we can save lives. And for me, that just got me hooked. To have that opportunity to speak to people and educate them in that way and promote such an important issue, it really hooked me. So I did a few pageants that year. I ended up actually placing, which was even more amazing. And so despite everything, after having the defibrillator and being able to play sports again, I stuck with the pageant world. And at first it was just kind of it was a fun thing, it was exciting, and then it was like, hey, you know what? I can do this. I could win Miss Massachusetts. And it took me 4 shots, but I did it.
Fantastic. That sounds
Yeah.
wonderful. I'm just thinking in my mind that you can actually balance a soccer ball as a talent, though, on
You know, I
the
asked them that. At one point, I thought maybe I could shoot some free throws or
There
something,
you go.
and then,
Yeah.
I didn't know what to do for a talent at first. I had played piano in elementary and middle school, but it's not like riding a bike. It doesn't really stay with you as much as you'd like it. So I played these like really simple, not so great piano piece my first time in pageants, and my mom said, "Oh my gosh, you need a new talent." But eventually, as I was pushing myself to be part of this and do better, I took up singing, and now I'm a singer. I love it. I've been able to do a lot of performing, and so it's great.
That's wonderful to
I
hear.
found all kinds of talents I didn't know I had.
Yeah, see? I mean, because you could have gone up and said, okay, guys, this is what I need to do. I need to do a corner kick. I can bang
Right,
the ball.
Just won't allow that. It's too bad.
That's right. Yeah. They don't have the big enough a stage to do
No,
that,
they don't.
Your platform for Miss America was Heart Health, Listen, Learn, and Live. Please share with us the essence behind it.
Well, again, it was based on my personal experience with heart disease, and when I went to the Miss America pageant, I ended up becoming a national spokesperson for the American Heart Association and for Parent Heart Watch. And just to kind of incorporate all the work I was doing, people just really needed to listen to the knowledge that was out there, learn how they can incorporate it into their own lives, and then truly live it, which is the hardest part. I think a lot of us know what the right things to do for our health are. We know we're supposed to eat well and exercise every day and all that, but truly living it and taking that step to make your health a priority is the hardest step. But that was kind of the mantra that I promoted that year and continue to ever since.
That's wonderful. One of the things also in your situation is kind of unique because it's true that diet's got a lot to do with your heart condition and everything else, but then you're looking at a genetic issue here,
Yeah.
whereby you can be a perfect athlete and you
Oh,
have
yeah.
no idea that you're a walking time bomb.
Absolutely. I mean, you don't look at some of these athletes and think, you want to pick me out of the crowd as being the person with the heart condition. And so often we're never looking at athletes' heart because they have healthy hearts based on their exercise and the way they're taking care of their bodies. But yeah, it is the underlying pieces that worry us. And I guess the crazier part is all the testing is there, but it's not a standard part of what we do to test people. It's not part of our testing we get as a kid or as a teenager, but it's all available and it's all there. And so much of many of the deaths could be prevented, but it just comes down to issues of money and all this other craziness, and you fight what you can fight for.
You've done a lot of work with a lot of organizations nationally.
Yes.
The question is, have you seen the improvement in terms of the awareness among the community as well as, I guess, the nation? And of course, in this case, to be honest with you, the question will be among the younger generation.
Yeah, I think there is a much higher heart health awareness. that's there, and I think it's for a variety of reasons. One piece I think is the American Heart Association has done a great job, especially with their Go Red for Women campaign, and you'll see the little red dresses all month this month.
Right.
And, just kind of not only heightening the fact that heart disease is the number one killer of women, but really of all Americans. And I think when I started this whole quest, it was amazing how many people I still thought that cancer was the number one killer in our country, when in fact, I mean, how many more people are dying from heart disease. So I think that has definitely done wonders to just heighten people's awareness about their heart health. I also think that there's been so much legislation that's gone through in this country, especially in the last 5 to 10 years, with regards to getting, automated external defibrillators, the AEDs, in our schools, in our communities, lobbying for, childhood nutrition. That's huge. I think it's finally, people are finally starting to get it, and I think we have a long way to go, but we've certainly come a long way as well.
Well, the timing is right, too. I think people are understanding that it's no longer a weight issue problem because that's always what has been going on, because you associate fat people or fat individual, obese people with heart attacks and everything else. And so we're not looking at something that's inside a person that, you can be normal and yet you can overnight just fall flat on your feet.
Oh, absolutely. And, and not only that, people sometimes aren't aware of the other issues that are causing some heart issues, such as stress.
Right.
I mean, you could have this really, thin, seemingly healthy-looking person, and yet they could still end up with, something lethal happen regarding their heart, based on other factors, the smoking, the stress, these other pieces that you can't see. So it's not just the obese people that we're having an issue with. Although, of course, right now, I mean, the obesity in childhood and diabetes in childhood is unbelievable. And I think that's another part that why people are starting to get it, is they're really looking around and seeing that we just have such an unhealthy generation that we're raising.
Right.
That to the point where the first time in the history of mankind, this generation is not expected to live to an older age than their parents. That's scary.
Right.
With all the advancements in science, we're not just taking the simple steps of what we're putting in our bodies and controlling that.
Are there any tips that you can give us in terms of warning signs that we all need to pay attention to about our heart in this case? Not that you're 20 pounds overweight or anything like that. Of course, that's right in front of you. But from a perspective of genetically, the things that you have experienced, like you say, because, hey, I'm fine, I run, I do this, I do that, and yet there's something wrong with me. So please share some of those with us.
Yeah, I think there's a few things there. It is important to know your family history. You definitely want to be aware if there's been any unexpected deaths, especially at a young age. Those types of things are really important to know. But I think most importantly is know your own body and know what normal means for you. We all have our different versions of normal.
Mm-hmm.
And, anything out of the ordinary, you have to put the pride aside and you got to go to the doctor's office and make that appointment and get checked. And I think the same thing for our kids. I mean, anything that just seems, just not right. I mean, I'm so thankful. My mom pushed and pushed and pushed to make sure I kept seeing the next doctor, because she just had that feeling, that she needed to go one step further. And thank goodness she did, because I fought her every step of the way because I felt fine. I was okay.
Right.
And now I look back and some of the things I thought was normal for me wasn't necessarily normal, whether it be dizzy spells or, some fainting. There's no such thing as a faint that means nothing.
Right.
It's not about, they're going through puberty, or, she's a girl, or, that's just foolishness. Everything comes from something. So, yeah, know yourself and know what you should be feeling and not be feeling, and anything out of the blue. I mean, we have the doctors available here in this country. We're very lucky, so take advantage of that.
She's just exercising motherly love. That's what your mom said.
Yes, she was. She used to be my pain in the butt mom, so I love her.
Tell us a little bit about your work with Parent Health Watch. What do they do and so forth?
Oh, yeah. Parent Heart Watch is a tremendous organization. They were founded essentially by four moms who found each other on the internet who had all lost a child to sudden cardiac arrest. So most of them had some, like me, an underlying heart condition they didn't know about. and their kids dropped dead, and they were able to find each other, to, you know, unify for support initially, and then they decided they wanted to create something bigger. And Parent Heart Watch was formed. They had their first conference 6 years ago, I believe, and basically gathered parents from across the country like them who had lost, you know, who had lost the child. From there, you know, I ended up speaking at their conference in 2007. I came as kind of a surprise guest. I was Miss Massachusetts at the time. I was about to go to Miss America. And, you know, I told my story to them. And at first I just couldn't figure out why they'd want to hear from me. Because here they were, you know, they had lost someone. And I had this guilt. Like, I was here. I made it. I got diagnosed. I was treated. I'm doing well. And I just, you know, remember that weekend, they just reassured me. They said, no, this organization is about you. This is about us wanting more stories like you, not about ones like our kids. So that, you know, it ended up creating a piece of the membership to it that was survivors and survivors' parents. And it's just such, you have never met more motivated and determined people, because to, you know, to do this much fighting, you know, they've passed so much legislation and got so many heart screenings done and placed so many AEDs, and to do that sort of fighting in memory of your child, I mean, you can't imagine what their passion is like. So, you know, I'm very active with them, speaking all over the country with them, and yeah, the work they do is unreal.
Is that correlated with the survivors camp that you're involved with also?
No, that's another piece. There's actually several survivors camps around the country where they take kids who have heart conditions, some of whom have, you know, defibrillators or pacemakers, have had open heart surgery, all kinds of things, and they'll do a camp for kids, usually run by doctors and nurses, so of course their parents feel much safer about sending them. you know, what else do you usually let your kids sleep out if they have such a serious condition? But I guess when they're with their own doctor, it's pretty easy. So, yeah, I've got to do a lot of camps around the country, including one in New Hampshire called Camp Meridian, which is so much fun. And it's just a weekend for these kids to just be kids, but also be able to connect with other kids who are going through some of the same issues. And it's a blast. I mean, when I did my first one when I was Miss Massachusetts, you know, I showed up and I'm in my camp gear, and they kept telling the kids, we have a special guest for you. We have a surprise guest for you. And I'm floating around and interacting with the kids, and they're like, everyone, Miss Massachusetts is here. They're all looking around, and I kind of waved, and here I am. They're like, you're really, you know. But I pulled out my crown, and I told my story, and I just remember this five-year-old being like, that's so cool, Miss Massachusetts has a heart problem too, you know. And it was so awesome, you know, like that's what kind of got me hooked, is, you know, being able to be that person that looks at them and say, you know what, despite any of your obstacles, despite your condition, you can achieve whatever you want. And it's a pretty great feeling. And then, of course, you know, you get to compare scars and, you know, crack all kinds of robot jokes, because we like to do that sort of stuff. So, yeah, those are great. They're wonderful camps.
You also do some work internationally. One of the ones that I've seen on your site is Heartbeat International. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so Heartbeat International is a tremendous group. They're based out of Florida, but what they do is, in this country, are in the pacemakers, the ICDs like mine, and other cardiac devices, they have a shelf life. So, you know, say there's a pacemaker sitting on the shelf, and there's 5 years left of use in it. Well, once it gets past that 5 years and there's, you know, 4 years and 364 days, we can't legally use it in this country. We have all kinds of different standards and whatnot. So what happens is the device industry will donate some of these to Heartbeat International. Heartbeat International across the globe in developing countries have what they call pace banks. And they'll send out these devices to these pace banks where there's volunteer physicians who provide the surgery and all the follow-up care that's needed for the patients that need it. Because right now, in reality, 1 million people die every year around the world because they can't get these devices. And so, you know, Heartbeat International is playing the part it can play in trying to save some of these people. And, I mean, you know, the work they do is unbelievable. They're able to save a life with $500. And go forward with that. So they actually do a lot of work through Rotary clubs. So I've actually been able to do a lot of speaking locally to Rotary clubs, making them aware of this organization, you know, gaining further support for them. I was able to meet doctors from all over the world at a conference they had, and they're unbelievable.
That's fantastic. One question, though, the fact that it is less than 5 years shelf life, so does that mean that that person only have 5 years to live?
No, it would just mean, so when you get like an ICD or a pacemaker, you get it put in, but it's essentially a battery, so you need a new one in a certain amount of time. So usually it's like 5 to 7 years. You know, the battery life's getting even longer. Mm-hmm. So those devices, well, they last 4 years instead of five. Well, they still have 4 years of life in them, you know, that can save someone's life right now and keep them on a list of someone who would have the new battery change when needed.
I see. So why let it go away?
Oh, exactly.
That's what it is.
Yeah, exactly. So. Because what else would we do with them here? Destroy them? So, you know, there are obviously conditions, there are different medical regulations in different parts of the country, so it allows us to be able to do that.
That's interesting. Can you share with us the 6 steps to a healthy heart?
I sure can. Well, the 6 steps to a healthy heart are something I kind of formulated based on a lot of the things that I enjoy doing. Mm-hmm. But the first one, as I've talked about, also, is know your family history. There's so much heart disease that's genetic, but know the conditions and symptoms that you have in your family. And, again, know any unexpected or unexplained deaths, especially if the person was young. The second one is, make heart healthy decisions. And again, that's a really hard one, but, eat healthy, exercise often, stop smoking, manage your stress, make sure you see your doctor. And because those habits really lead to a healthier life and a longer life. And yes, we lead very busy lives. I can tell you firsthand, I know what that means, but if you don't have your health, what do you have? So that's huge. The third one is, learn about heart screenings that can exist. So, you might not have any symptoms. You might not have family history of heart disease or sudden cardiac arrest, but neither do a lot of victims who end up dying from sudden cardiac arrest have, So when it's available, a lot of times insurance is not covering these tests, but sometimes there's like screening programs and whatnot that go around. But very simple cardiac tests like, EKGs and echocardiograms can help you discover a wealth of information about your heart. So it's information that's really important. And, and it's important to know that they feel that as many as 1 in 300 people may have one of these conditions that could be potentially fatal. That's a huge amount of people.
Yeah.
So, again, it's hard because if insurance isn't covering it, but, you typically are covered if you have any symptoms whatsoever. And, again, sometimes you have these touring programs that will offer them at a very reasonable cost, and I think it's definitely a great decision to make. The next one is basically, be informed. Know the symptoms and the risk factors that exist for heart disease. Have your heart checked if you experience any unexplained dizziness or seizures, fainting, lightheadedness, discomfort, pain, anything, fatigue, anything that seems peculiar. And, again, know your own body, know your own numbers, meaning your blood pressure, your glucose, your cholesterol. And also to be aware that women and men have very different symptoms. For years, all the research that we based our thoughts on heart disease on were all based on research that was done with men. So when we heard about particular, symptoms for a heart attack or this or that, it was based on what men had, not on what women. So, know what those differences are. And, there's so many, the Internet's a wonderful thing. There's so many resources available to us to learn now. So, it's definitely a way you can be informed. The next important step is to become trained in CPR and in using an AED. So, again, AEDs are these automated external defibrillators. They're very inexpensive now, relatively inexpensive. You see them, they're in all the airports. They're in all the airplanes. You see them in, actually, casinos. It's probably the safest place, for the record, to ever have a sudden cardiac arrest is a casino, just in case you were wondering. there's so much lobbying going on to try to get AEDs mandatory in our schools. Massachusetts, that fight still continues here, but I know Texas has passed it. AEDs are in the schools there. They're in the schools in New York. So there's quite a good-sized handful of states that now have it. But, you know, basically every minute that a person who has sudden cardiac arrest, their chance to live falls by 10% every minute without action. So after 5 minutes is a 50% chance. After 10 minutes, likely they're not going to survive. Using an AED and CPR on a victim immediately gives that person about a 70 to 75% chance of survival versus a 4%, 5% chance if no one helps them and nothing is done. So, you know, those are odds I would definitely want in my favor.
Yeah.
And, you know, the last step is educate others. You know, you spread the information that you do learn with others, you know and love, how to maintain a healthy heart, because it's the only way we can save more lives.
Well, I know you're instrumental with the AED being in the schools.
Mm-hmm.
And so obviously you made lots of strides with it, correct?
Yeah, we you know, it's such a hard thing because it requires a lot of money, and a lot of times states don't want to pass unfunded mandates. But we have in Massachusetts at least been able to place them. They are mandatory in our gyms and health clubs, and that was done in memory of Kayla Richards, who in her, I believe she was 20, she was working out on a treadmill and collapsed, and they're not sure what her condition was, but she did die from her sudden cardiac arrest. And in record time, 11 months later, we ended up having a law that required the AEDs in the gyms and health clubs. But unfortunately, it shouldn't have to take a death to make the right decision, you know, to happen. So, you know, we fight as much as we can with to get the AEDs out there. But in the meantime, I do a lot of fundraising and work in my community to make sure that they're where they need to be.
I see. You are also the spokesperson for SAD. Is that correct? S-A-D-S?
Yep.
Yes.
I also do a lot of work with the SAD Foundation. What's really wonderful about SADS is when I was diagnosed, let's see, 11 years ago now, at 17 years old, there were very, very few resources out there that could shed any information on long QT syndrome. And SADS was the only resource I found that could educate me on what I had and what that meant and how to help others. And, you know, they have amazing resources to this day about, you know, what parents should be aware of with their kids, you know, what kinds of medications might cause, you know, your long QT to be worse. I mean, you name it, they have it. And so they have some really, really good information. And, you know, I hold them close to my heart because they were able to help me get through a lot of what I did.
You are also a CPR trainer and AED trainer. I remember going to school, you learned CPR because you were in scouts.
Right.
And then that's it. Nobody else knew what the heck CPR is. We don't talk
it's
about
crazy.
It. Yeah.
I think that's another piece that's come a long way, especially where they're working so hard to simplify it as much as possible, the standards as much as possible, because there were so many steps to it before that it really intimidated people to be able to help when needed.
Mm-hmm.
So now, I mean, they've really broken it down into knowing that compressions are the most important piece. If there's nothing else you remember, you know, they're doing this piece with bystander CPR where you just push hard, push fast on the chest for, someone who's collapsed.
Mm-hmm.
They've just made it as easy as possible. And, you know, the training, it's an easy training, it's a fun training, and it can save lives. So to me, it's a no-brainer. get certified.
This is something interesting. What is an adjustment counselor?
An adjustment counselor. So basically I am licensed by the Department of Education in Massachusetts. People are more familiar with guidance counselors, I think, in the high schools where they're helping kids with their schedules and looking forward toward their careers and what they're going to do. I'm basically there as a counselor in the sense of the word of, you know, being there for emotional support, emotional stability. It's very hard to perform academically if we're having a difficult day. You know, Fall River being the city that it is, we have a lot of kids with a lot of pressing issues and a lot of high-risk kids coming from different situations. So I'm the person there in the true sense of the word, I guess, counselor, to be able to sit down and talk to the kids. You know, I also run some groups. We connect our kids with different community resources that they may need for themselves and their families. It's kind of a you name it, we do it job, but truly human service piece there in terms of what we try to perform.
So you don't go out there and say you need an attitude adjustment or something like
no,
that?
No,
right?
Well, you know, sometimes I do those too. Some of my kids need those too.
You know, I need to adjust you right now.
Yes.
That's it.
I try.
How does art therapy come into play?
Art therapy has been a great piece. It's interesting because when I went to school, you know, for art therapy, you hear about how just it tends to be like, especially the adult population is very against the art piece. I think, you know, so many people have had that art teacher that gave them that low grade in third grade, and then, you know, they're left with, oh, I can barely draw a stick figure. How am I going to draw art in terms of therapy? But we use art in the therapy process is really a means of the process, not the product, and there's so much that can come out within the art process that can make it seem feel safer, and if you look at things like trauma, you know, according to research, our brains actually store trauma photographically. So sometimes when people truly don't have the words to express how they feel about something that's happened to them, it's because the words really aren't there. So art might give them that piece to be able to put it on paper in some way in a safe, contained format, and it might open up that bridge for communication to express their feelings. So it can just be used in so many ways. It's a really exciting and interesting field, and it's gaining a lot of popularity now. So that's really nice to see.
Very interesting. I've got a very good friend of mine who is an art therapist, and that's the reason why I brought it up too, because it's kind of interesting. It's coming up to be something that is wonderful to use in therapy.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And along with that is music therapy and movement therapy, and it's just really dealing with the person as the holistic being that they are. You know, it's dealing with them in their whole body sense, which isn't traditionally something we do in America, so it's exciting to see that move forward.
When did this happen to you as far as being holistic in the way you approach things? Can this be attributed to the fact that you went through what you went through during your teenage years, or is this something that you just, over a period of time, you just fall into it?
Well, I think specifically in terms of the art, when I got diagnosed, you know, I really kind of threw myself into my schoolwork and in my artwork. And, I took art classes at the time. I wasn't the most amazing artist, but I loved it. And I found myself doing art more and more during that time to get through what I was going through, and truly found the benefits of art therapy on my own. And when I learned about the field later, it all made sense. Like, I understand that. I get how art can help someone get through things. And I think that it just opened my eyes to that holistic side of things. And I think that was the biggest push for my becoming who I became in that sense, was having to deal with my heart condition, and how I got through that was a big piece of it was art. It really was.
For me, my sister helped me through art classes. Because I would be in class, and she would be doing all the drawings for me, you know. And
you cheated in art class. Oh, no.
No, it's what we call, you know, you don't have the fresh over ideas that happens in class time, right?
Yep.
So you take it home, and your sister do your artwork for you, and I do the math for her, you see. So we trade.
Ah, okay. That's a good bartering system.
Yeah. It was crazy because I remember one year where all my projects, I always got A, and we have this national exam that we have to take. I lived in Malaysia, and my art teacher was saying, you know, I'm disappointed that Johnny made a B in the national exam. And it's like, my mom and I was about to crack up laughing, like, we are praying that he would not get a C. Because all this while, my sister is the one who's doing all my artwork for me just to make sure that I made it through. And then, of course, I was put in what we call the science stream, where I don't have to do art anymore. So thank God. So she's the one who did all that stuff for me. So it works out very well. You did a lot of work internationally, and you were in Tanzania. Tell us about that.
Yeah, right after graduating from college, I had plans actually to live in Haiti for a year and help out with the Haitian Health Foundation. And at the time, there was a lot of political excitement going on in Haiti, and for a short period, no Americans were allowed in the country. So while I was waiting to get approved to do that program, I applied for my master's degree. For grad school and got accepted, so I decided to take that route. But I was kind of disappointed I wasn't going to be, you know, doing that sort of that sort of works. And a friend of mine was going to be traveling to Africa. His father was part of the group Jambo Tanzania, and it's a group that visits the Bukoba region of Tanzania every other year, and you know, basically provides the health needs for all the local villages. And that's the only health care they receive, is that once every 2 years. So we went out there, and our main job was photo documenting and video documenting the experience, but we also played the role of pharmacists, and you name it, we did it. We set up in sort of an abandoned shack building. Every day we'd have to, you know, we go lock everything up at the end of the day, but every day we'd unpack everything and start seeing all the patients. And in a 3-week period, we saw about 1,500 patients, mainly kids.
Wow.
And you know, when you see so many people dying of malnutrition and dehydration and just things we don't give a second thought to in this country, you know, you realize how lucky we are, not only, you know, to have everything we have, but especially just the medical care alone, because that's what a huge percentage of our world is living in. That's not, you know, just Tanzania by any means.
Right.
So, it was definitely an eye-opening experience. And it's an experience I've taken with me in everything I've done. It's always, I think, helped me keep a good perspective on my life.
Wonderful. Tell us about this coming weekend, second annual Fall River Children's Healthy Heart Festival.
Yeah, so, well, actually, the first one I had was back in 2009 in July.
Mm-hmm.
I was approached by the Congenital Heart Defect Awareness Quilt Project.
Mm-hmm.
And what this group does is they have squares in memory of in support of a child with a congenital heart defect. And, I mean, they have, like, there must be, like, 80 to 100 quilts filled with these squares. So once a year they pick a place. They never go back to the same place, but they pick a place to have their quilt show. They called me up. They said, hey, you know, we'd love you to host it as a survivor. We'd love to bring it to the Fall River area. What do you say? And I was like, oh, all right, that sounds exciting. And they said, okay, well, your job is to get people there. I'm like, okay. I'm like, all right. It's a quilt show, you know, which if you're not into quilting or into the whole, you know, like you don't understand the whole heart world and stuff, it's a tough draw. Like, how do you get a lot of people interested and excited about you know, seeing this and what else can I turn it into? So that's how this festival was born, the Fall River Children's Healthy Heart Festival. We had the quilt show as part of it, and it was also a way that we got together, like, different local and national organizations that were health-related. They were giving out information to the families. I had all kinds of exercise and fun activities going on, so kids were learning about different ways to be healthy and exciting things to do, and they had healthy snacks. It was a free event. The more participation they had, like, you know, I went over and I did the hula hoop contest and I did the jump rope contest and I had some apples, and everything they did, they'd get a ticket for. So by the end, we have this great raffle that ends with, and we give out just sports equipment and all healthy things, and it ends with raffling off a Wii at the end. So we had a huge crowd. We weren't sure what to expect, especially in the summer, but we had about 400 people come through that day, which was great, at the local Boys and Girls Club. I wanted it to become an annual event. The quilt show is no longer part of it because they, again, only go to the same place once. But then I wanted to back it up into Heart Month. I thought it was really important to have it in February while awareness was heightened. So, this upcoming weekend will be the second annual Fall River Children's Healthy Heart Festival. Part of the event is that we do donate AEDs to some local organizations. And we just have a ball. It's just so much fun.
What kind of attendance are you anticipating for this weekend?
I don't know. I think it's going to be bigger, though. I do.
Do you have a lot of local sponsors?
We have some great local sponsors. We have a lot of great publicity going on in the newspapers, on TV, and in the schools. The kids will all be getting, all the elementary school kids will be getting their invitation this week. So I'm anticipating it's going to be a good-sized crowd, and I'm really excited to see what the turnout is.
These are just only for kids, or do you have any specific program within the festival for the parents?
Well, I think what's nice is that we do have the health fair component of the festival, and there you can have your blood pressure done. You can get all kinds of information about local organizations that are doing things. So I think that's more geared toward the adults and providing them information for them and their families. We'll have some information from the American Heart Association, from Parent Heart Watch, stuff that will be more, you know, up the parents' alleys versus the kids. The kids will be there, and they'll be enjoying, I'm sure, the face painting and the Fall of Wreath soccer shootout and all kinds of other, you know, the dance lessons that are going on. So different ways to learn, you know, maybe things they've never been exposed to before in terms of just exercise and how much fun it can be.
That sounds wonderful. You've done other works as well. You are heavily involved with Peaceful Coalition. Please tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. Peaceful Coalition is actually a high school-based group that was formed about 12 years at Durfee High School, where I currently work. And it was built as a result of dealing with the gang problems that we were having in our city and especially in our schools. There was a lot of violence spilling over into the school day between rival gang members, and Peaceful Coalition was formed. When I interned at the high school some years back, I played an active role as one of the leaders in the Peaceful Coalition with the two gentlemen, Paul Lee and Tom Corey, who they run this boys group. So basically, these boys meet once a week during the school day and talk about issues, real issues going on in the city, in the country, related to violence, related to gangs. And a lot of these kids, they're high risk for a lot of things going on in their life, but they just haven't been given those other options before. You know, we look at these kids and say, you can go to college. You can get a great legal job. You can, hook them up with these, just these different options that maybe other people in their life have never told them that they had. And it's just a really tremendous group. So I actually run a girls Peaceful Coalition group now in the school, and I'm also the community coordinator. So, you know, doing a lot of work with getting our kids, maybe doing community service in the community, marketing ourselves out there. You know, we have a great web page that's launched, and just overall just trying to get the information out there and connect with other community organizations and working together.
Fantastic. How has your passionate involvement in all of the above impacted you personally?
I just think, you know, it's who I am. I think, like I said earlier, my parents instilled in me at a young age to give.
Yeah.
And I always appreciated that I was lucky in many areas of my life. And I think when you're blessed, it's your responsibility to help others. Mm-hmm. And I just think it's just who I am. You know, I have a hard time saying no. So I get asked, Michaela, will you do it? Absolutely, because, you know, I feel like if I'm not going to do it, who is?
Right.
I'm not the type, I guess, who will step back and think it'll take care of itself. So, all this stuff is just who I am.
Do you feel that life's turning point so far for you has been a spiritual blessing in some ways?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think there's been a huge spiritual blessing. I have a very strong spirituality. I've always stayed connected with that, especially through all the obstacles and the tough times. And, it's a big part of who I am.
What else can we expect from you in 2011?
Oh, it's going to be a big year.
Wonderful.
No, I'm hoping to place a lot of AEDs in the city, and certainly continue lobbying efforts however I can, both on a state level and nationally. My big hope for 2011 is to launch a Young Survivors Network online, a place where survivors can really connect, especially young heart survivors, because I think we go through a lot of different issues. And having met all the young survivors that I've met, I think it'll just be such a key way to get through those tough times and be able to provide support to others. I think I was connected with one person who was about 10 years older than me when I was going through, about to have my surgery at 17 years old. And while it helped, I can't imagine what it would have been like. It would have been just so much better if I had had other survivors that I could speak to regularly, someone maybe closer to my age, someone who had a condition similar to my own, I think that would have been, you know, incredible for my healing and, you know, to get through those tough days. So I'm hoping I can provide that to other survivors who are going through all that.
Fascinating. Is there anything else besides that? Any personal things that you're trying to get accomplished?
The big pieces. I'm looking to, you know, buy a house. write a book.
There you go.
We'll see. We'll see.
Where can someone go get more information about you and keep up with your latest happenings?
Well, you can check out my website. It's MichaelaGagne.com. It's spelled MichaelaGagne.com. I keep a running blog of the different things I'm involved in. I have different resources on my webpage, and it's just kind of my my personal corner to, you know, get ideas about the advocacy work that you could do. You know, especially a lot of survivors will contact me via that and say, "Oh, how'd you do that? How'd you get involved in that event? What can I do?" So I think it provides some good ideas to how to get out there. And, it's just my, you know, my little area of the web.
Wonderful. Do you have a lot of support nationally in terms of the things that you're trying to do at your age, in terms of the younger generation coming in and say, you know, I like this, I want to be involved with it? How is that happening?
Yeah, I get a lot of support. It's so funny. I've done a lot of professional speaking around the country related to the heart health. So I meet all these people along the way. And at least a few times a week, I get an email in my email box just saying, hey, you know, my daughter just got diagnosed. You know, I'm from Wisconsin. My daughter just got diagnosed with this. Can you connect with her? Or, you know, I'll get something on Facebook like, you know, I just got diagnosed with this. I'm your age. My little daughter is going to have it too. And sometimes it's just, hey, great job with the work you're doing. Thanks for inspiring me. You know, so I get all these kind of emails all the time, and it's always, I guess, pushes me to do more and more work because that means I'm touching people. I'm touching people nationally, and it's a great feeling because that means maybe one more person is educated about what they need to do for themselves, or one more person has found a little bit of support to get through their condition. It's funny because, you know, you look back at Miss America, and everyone's like, oh my gosh, you went on the Miss America stage. Wasn't that fantastic? And I was like, yeah, it was all right. It was cool, you know, but the coolest part was getting an email during the Miss America pageant. I go back to my room one night, and I had been in the USA Today a couple days prior to, because I was going to have this scar on my chest and walk across the stage, and oh my goodness.
Wow.
But it was a good way to get out all this great information about, you know, sudden cardiac arrest. So this lady writes an email, and she said, you know, I have to have an ICD surgery. I read your story, and I told myself, if Miss Massachusetts can do it, then so can I. She said, I finally scheduled the surgery date. And it kind of, you know, and I cried that night. I said, oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
And that's just someone who actually reached out to me and told me what my story meant. Maybe there's others that, you know, I'll never hear from, I'll never meet.
Right.
But that to me was what it was all about, because it was never about having that crown or, you know, wearing those gowns. It was about what I could do. It was a megaphone to be able to get out there and spread information. So, I think it's been well received around the country, and I just hope that information keeps getting out there.
Do you feel like that's the number one challenge? Because once you're being diagnosed, and then the next thing will be the trauma of like, oh my God, do I need to go through this surgery?
Yeah.
Or should I not?
It's a tough time. It's a really tough time to experience. Not only the surgery, and again, I think, you know, females have some different issues going on than males. I mean, the scar was never a big issue for me. I've had other survivors say, you know, oh my gosh, I never want to wear a swimsuit again. Or, you know, what's it going to look like? Am I going to be ugly? There's just so many different issues, emotionally and mentally that you deal with this stuff, let alone, oh my gosh, I could die from, from the heart condition I have. And that's what I kind of hope that the Survivors Network will address, is all these different things.
Wonderful. By the way, we're coming close to the end of the show. Do you have a recipe for living you would like to share with all our listeners?
You know, I do. I'm actually going to read something to you that I wrote.
Sure.
That I think kind of sums up what I try to live by. It goes like this. I believe that there's no greater force in the world than love, and that those who welcome it in their lives will truly live. I believe that adults should give themselves permission to be children, sing, paint, laugh, play, and grow, and you will surely be happier and offer more to the world. I believe that life is not about what could have happened. Life is about what is. Life is about looking through the front windshield, not the rearview mirror. I believe that dreams are so important, but some may never come true, and that's okay. A disappointment can hold a new sense of purpose and direction. I will never, ever stop dreaming. I just won't stop myself from reshaping those goals into something even greater. I believe in celebrating the people who have helped shape me into the fighter, giver, dreamer, artist, optimist, survivor, and believer I have become. I will show my love and appreciation to the family and friends who make my life beautiful. I believe that life is about choices. I can choose to make my life and this world better. I can choose to turn obstacles into opportunities. I can choose to see the potential that surrounds me at every moment. I believe in making every day special. Special has many definitions. What's yours? Thank you.
That's fantastic. That's wonderful. That's fantastic. Are you living your life the way it is?
I think so. You know, we all need those reminders from day to day, and to say that every day is perfect and motivated and on the right, the straight line would be foolish, but I think we all need once we get that slap back to reality, you know, I think I am. I'm in a great place in my life right now. I just got married in August, which is wonderful. I have two beautiful stepchildren. Thank you. Mm-hmm. I have two beautiful stepchildren that live with us, and so I'm Mama Bear now, too. So, you know, I think I'm living a very fulfilling and happy life.
That's wonderful. I'm really glad to hear that. From just talking to you, I could sense the energy that you have, and this is why I'm so excited to have you with me today on the air, because I believe that you have so much to contribute
in
making
you.
A difference in our global community, and that is very difficult sometimes in today's challenging world that we don't take time out to think about stuff like that or what we can do to contribute to make things a lot better, and you just did it. Michaela, thank you for the great recipe for living and for spending this hour with me on From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. It's been a great hour, and thank you again, and have a wonderful day.
Thank you, Johnny.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
To all our listeners, thank you for being with us. I hope you have enjoyed the pre-recorded interview with Michaela. Please join me next Tuesday morning. My guest will be best-selling author and public speaker Paul Wedding. His best-selling book, If You Only Knew What You Already Know, detail his amazing personal experiences on being a better human being. Paul and I will be discussing about his transformational journey from living life callously to living life with passion and purpose. For additional information about this show, future shows, and to receive a free recipe for living, please go to FromMyMamasKitchen.com. Thank you for listening and have a great week.